The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, Debbie and I will discuss the relentless pursuit of Trump by the left, Venezuelans in Martha's Vineyard, and whether digital platforms can save the censorship policies by appealing to the Supreme Court. I'll look at a new study of the GOP and explain why the dismay of the left should be the cause of a little self-satisfaction on the right. And I'll continue my narrative of Odysseus in the lands of the Cyclopes, the giants, and a sorceress named Circe. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I want to discuss an article in the Washington Post. I mentioned in the article. It's called Trump's Big Lie Fueled a New Generation of Social Media Influencers. And the basic theme of the article is that that as a result of Trump and people like Rush, you've now seen a new generation of Trumpsters, if you will, who are supposedly doing all kinds of horrible things in social media, spreading all kinds of misinformation, disinformation, and so on. The article is revealing, but not in the way that the authors intend. It's revealing because we see as we read the article, first of all, that there's no misinformation or disinformation involved at all. What we are talking about are disputed opinions. And so, for example, at one point they talk about the fact that the social media influencers, us, we'll talk about who we mean in a moment, are complaining about grooming. And the Washington Post goes on to say, while these right wingers basically say that grooming involves inappropriate interactions with children and young people, in fact, they're merely referring to providing young people with sex education. Now, obviously, that's their view of it. That is not the conservative view of it. And there are lots of examples that you can show that we're not just talking about clinical sex education. We're not just talking about age-appropriate sex education. We're talking about stuff that crosses the line. We're talking about highly suggestive and adult and lewd behavior that is not only talked about to children, but sort of shoved in their face. So to the Washington Post, that is misinformation. So we can completely discount and write off what they mean by misinformation. They're not talking about misinformation at all. The other thing is that you notice that with these social media influencers, we say what we do on social media, on all the various platforms, and our megaphones are small compared to the left. They have much bigger megaphones. They have a whole army of disguised fact-checkers who aren't really fact-checkers. They're leftist polemicists, but they're masquerading as fact-checkers. They've got the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Boston Globe. They've got all of this to challenge our point of view. And evidently, in the debate of ideas, they're losing. They're losing in the sense that they keep talking about how we social media influencers keep growing, our influence is greater, our point of view dominates the right and the Republican Party. And all of this is another way of saying that nobody believes the nonsense that the left is putting out on the other side. So you can see that the underlying tone of the article is that why don't these social media platforms censor these people more? They talk about the fact some of them were censored, some of them were kicked off, but you know what? Some of them having been kicked off are back. And of course, people like me have never been thrown off social media, although from time to time I've had at one point, I think I've talked about this on the podcast, a YouTube strike against me, in which they restrict my distribution. For a week, I was off of YouTube. And then Facebook, I've been in some sort of a Facebook, under a Facebook, what do you call it? A warning, for
shadow banned
on Facebook for the better part of a year. I think my shadow ban is lifted officially in November. So all this nonsense goes on. I pay attention to it, not too much attention to it. But the point I'm trying to make here is that from the Washington Post point of view, this is a very dangerous development. Essentially what they're saying is that they're losing the debate. And so they need censorship to take their opponent out. It's kind of like if I were going to go into a campus to debate somebody and I'm beating them in the debate and they're like, listen, let's shut the stage down. Let's turn the lights off. Let's move Dinesh off the stage and only let the other guy speak. This is basically what this article is all about. They start off by talking about this guy named Kyle Becker. They talk about 77 spreaders of disinformation. Turns out that this list of 77 was drawn from research by disinformation experts. How do you become a disinformation expert? What do you study to become a disinformation expert? These are all, exactly. Debbie's like, you're a Democrat. Disinformation expert. Disinformation experts at Stanford, Harvard, and Cornell. Think about it. You've got professors at these universities who have nothing better to do. They're like, let's go on social media. Let's see what Candace Owens and Steve Bannon and Jack Posobiec and Dinesh are posting. Let's follow Catter 2. These are all the names in the article that they talk about. And then, like I say, they talk about the fact that, you know, they say things like YouTube banned just 4 of the 77, while Facebook banned only 2, Trump and Bannon. And Benny Johnson, libs of TikTok. By and large, what this article is getting at is that a handful of people on our side are causing havoc with their side. Despite their big megaphones, they want ultimately a monopoly of the discourse. They want not just a one-party state, but a one-party megaphone with no one else being able to say different. And we are very much right now in their way. Mike Lindell, like Trump, seems to be fighting on all fronts. They're trying to cancel him. The FBI grabs Mike Lindell's phone. They want to investigate him, to intimidate him. Mike's not backing down, and we need to support Mike. The best way to do that is to buy his great products. I want to talk about the MyPillow towels, so much better than ordinary towels, which don't dry you very well anymore. They feel kind of soft and lotiony in the store. You take them home, they don't absorb. Why not? Ordinary towel companies typically import the product, then they add softeners to make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Now, Mike Lindell has solved this problem. He has the best towel company right here in the USA. They have proprietary technology to create towels that feel soft and actually work. They're made with USA cotton. They come with a 60-day money-back guarantee. We only use MyPillow towels in our home. For limited time, Mike is offering a really good deal on his 6-piece towel set. That's 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, 2 washcloths, all made with USA cotton, regularly $89.98, but now $49.98. A good deal. Call 800-876-0227. That number, 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. By the way, discounts on all the MyPillow products. To get these discounts, you need to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. There are just so many vectors or angles of attack against Trump coming from the left. In fact, the New York Times recently summarized them. They talked about the 6 investigations into Trump. They talk about an investigation in New York State, an investigation in Manhattan, an investigation in Georgia, a congressional investigation, a January 6th investigation, the Mar-a-Lago documents, the classified documents investigation. But most recently in the news, the Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, the latest investigation, apparently, into the not just Trump, but also the Trump family.
Yeah, the Trump family. I mean, this is just, you know, again, it's one of those things where they're just throwing spaghetti at the wall, and that whatever sticks, they think, is going to be what's going to bring him down. They know that something's got to, you know?
I mean, there's a little bit of a funny aspect to all this, because it's sort of like, you know, we thought we got him on that one. No, let's, you know, we got to move over here. We got to move over there.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to occur to the left that there's something fundamentally wrong about identifying the man, Trump, and then going looking for crimes.
Right. So what, didn't we say that? It's like, create the crime, put in the man. You know?
Right.
Right? And so...
And if this one doesn't work,
exactly,
let's go to the next stage.
Because really, truly, I mean, if the feds want someone to go to jail, they will find something for you to go to jail for. They will. And I think that they're really trying very hard. They're very scared of him. They think that if he's on the ballot in 2024, they're doomed. Not we're doomed, because America will be great again. But for them, America will be horrible. So they do not want that. And I think that they are going all out. I mean, look at this. Now, Letitia James is also going to file something in the Southern District of New York. You know that I've called that many times the judicial branch of the Democratic Party. That's the same court that got you. It goes after conservatives. I'm not sure that there's a single Democrat that place has gone after.
Now, you said something a moment ago, though, that caught my attention, and that is, you said that the left is afraid that Trump will win, right? Now, it's funny, because there are Republicans who think, well, you know, maybe we should move beyond Trump. Maybe we should look for somebody else, because after all, this guy just has so much attack and so on. But the left thinks that Trump is the strongest candidate on our side. That's why he's their main target.
Exactly.
DeSantis is kind of their second main target. Mm-hmm. Notice that many of the other people who think of themselves as presidential material aren't targets at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's because the left actually wants them. The left is trying to create, and I said this, I guess, on the podcast a day or two ago, a veto power over our nominee. And the latest thing appears to be the idea that the Trump family got really good deals from the banks.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Mm-hmm. Letitia James is basically coming to the defense of these big banks as if they can't watch out for themselves. The Trump family is presenting financial evaluations that are exaggerated. Now, everybody tries to put their own finances in a good light, right? You go apply for a loan. What are your assets? What are your liabilities? And so people go, well, I've got these really valuable assets, mm-hmm. and so on. So,
I mean, they should be going after the mafia family, i.e. the Biden family, because they probably have,
there's all kinds of evidence from not just from the laptop, Tony Babulinski.
Yes.
We know that there's foreign money that's flowed directly into the coffers of the Biden family. We have direct evidence it was distributed among the family members, not just Hunter, James and Frank Biden, Joe Biden.
This is a flat-out case of treason, really, with the Biden family. I mean, really. And yet they're not going after Biden at all. Because why? Because Biden is their, I don't want to say this out loud, but Biden is their B-I-T-C-H, right? And so they have to make sure
They
have to protect them. They have to make sure that the Biden family, including Hunter, and there have been some articles on the left about Hunter, but notice they don't make headlines, right? Because why? Because if they made headlines, people would go,
think about the implications if, let's say, Don Jr. It was revealed that Don Jr. in his phone, when he talked to his dad, Trump, had the name Pedo Pete, or let's say Pedo Don, come up. This would be
news
everywhere, blared everywhere, but it is muted on the left because they don't want to make it seem like their mafia boss is a pedophile.
Can you imagine calling your own father a pedophile?
Right.
And he does. I mean, that is when the phone...
I mean, it's not just coming from Hunter either. There's other evidence from the diary.
Yes, that basically his nickname for his own father was Pedo Pete. And so any time that he would call him on the phone, you know how your name pops up on the phone with your photo? So apparently it was Biden's photo and Pedo Pete. Not dad, not even the big guy, but Pedo Pete. What? I mean, that is just like disgusting.
I mean, think of what it is. Hunter is on to his dad.
Oh my gosh.
You know, he knows. I mean, Hunter's a pervert. But in a way, I guess what Hunter's saying is that look who raised me. That guy's an even bigger pervert.
All that to say, Letitia, you're going after the wrong guy.
What some of us would do just to be young again. Well, the simple things like climbing stairs, getting in and out of bed, taking a walk, sometimes aren't that simple. Too many aches and pains, but they can be because thankfully there's now a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie can finally do the exercises she loves, like planks, push-ups, her stationary bike, all thanks to Relief Factor. It's been a game changer for her and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. Debbie and I were talking yesterday about Texas and the group that is called LULAC. Now, LULAC stands for the League of United Latin American Citizens. It purports to be kind of a group representing the Latino or Hispanic community. In fact, it is a left-wing, far-left organization that is just part of the kind of infrastructure of the left. You encountered the LULAC people
in college.
In
honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, I'm wearing my little Mexican shirt.
Honey, I would have worn my sombrero and eating a burrito for the segment.
I forgot the maracas.
Okay.
So back to LULAC. So when I was in college, I was pursued by the president of LULAC at my college, back then it was Southwest Texas State, but now it's Texas State. And he kept, you know, why aren't you signing up for LULAC? I was like, because I don't want to. Because you guys make it an issue about being a Latino, and I don't want to make it an issue. And then he was, oh, that's because you think you're white. That's because you think you're an Anglo. And then I would answer him in Spanish. Full-blown Spanish, because my Spanish was way better back then.
It's pretty good now.
It's okay now, because I don't speak it as much, and if you don't use it, you lose it, right? But in college, I was pretty fluent. So I just rattled off to him. He had no idea what I was saying. He didn't even know Spanish. So anyway, back to LULAC. So they are actually suing Abbott, because they think that Abbott's, tactic of sending the bus loads to D.C. and where else did he send them? Not Martha's Vineyard. D.C. and New York. So he thought, oh, you are just dehumanizing these people. These Latinos from Central and South America, they deserve human rights. They deserve to have rights. Well, you know, here's the thing. They are breaking the law. Right. So really, by that logic, that means that if somebody breaks into our house, what, we have to feed them? We have to treat them with respect because they broke into our house? Hello?
Well, the situation here, though, is complicated, I think, because even though you're right that these are people who are not lawfully in the country, in a way, they're not like people who broke into your house because you never collaborated with them to get in the house. Think about it. The Biden administration.
Right. Yes, but that would be like, say, our community, HOA, collaborating with them without our consent.
Without our consent.
Because that's what's happening, is that the Biden administration is not asking the folks in the Rio Grande if it's okay for these people to come over, or anybody else
Not to mention that Texas as a state doesn't want them. And
right.
So Governor Abbott, in a sense, is saying, listen, you guys claim to be sanctuary cities.
Yes.
You are pushing for these guys.
And the brilliant thing about this is that nobody, and I mean nobody, is down there at the border filming these people coming in. So what Abbott did, what DeSantis did, is he's making it an issue. He wants the reporters to report about illegals because otherwise nobody else is reporting about illegals.
Yeah, I mean,
no one knows there's illegals in this country. But when they see it, and granted, this is only like 50 at a time. This is not the thousands upon thousands that come in every single day from Central and South America. Some of them even have Middle Eastern names, and they pose as Mexicans to come in. These are terrorists. And again, you know, where's LULAC when it comes to these little girls that are being raped on the way here? Where's LULAC? Hello, LULAC, where are you?
No, they don't care about any of that.
Care.
In fact, there's no sense that they care about the migrants. The migrants become valuable as pawns. And if you just watch the behavior of the left, it follows the political fortunes of the left and the Democratic Party. And so they care when they need to, they're indifferent when they need to be, and they're downright hostile if they need to be. If the migrants suddenly started speaking the language of Make America Great Again, upward mobility, mm-hmm. the left would turn viciously against the migrants, basically mm-hmm. say that the migrants themselves are racist, they're bringing the racist traditions of other countries to the United States. So the left would turn on them quickly if their political sympathies began to shift.
Yeah, I mean, like we, you know, for example, we came into this country, I was
they would
10
deport
years
us
old.
If they could.
I was 10 years old, but I knew that I wanted to be an American. And I knew that the culture in America was you speak English, you know, you celebrate all of the American holidays, you do all those things. Now, that didn't mean that I suddenly forgot where I came from or my primary natal language was. It was Spanish. So I did speak Spanish, and I wanted to make sure that I spoke both Spanish and English. English with everyone else, Spanish at home, and to be honest, I didn't even do that. I just wanted to speak English, and I just kind of went for it.
Yeah.
But we assimilated, right?
And we assimilated.
They don't want that.
They don't want that.
They don't want that.
Well, what they don't want is, and again, it's not as if we assimilated to the point where I've forgotten that I'm Indian. I mean, you can't be with Debbie for 6 hours without the name Venezuela coming up. So you retain even though you left the country at the age of 10, you have a close attachment to...
I have a close attachment to Venezuela and the Rio Grande Valley because I did grow up in the Rio Grande Valley.
Yeah.
A lot of my childhood was there as well. And of course, my mother's from there. So you're going to hear me talk about El Valle and Venezuela a lot. If you ever get airsick or car sick like I do, you know you'll do whatever it takes to feel normal again. And I don't mean using pills that make you drowsy or cheap sweatbands that just press on your wrist. So I've been using this device that actually works for about 15 years now. It's called Relief Band, and it's the number one FDA-cleared anti-nausea wristband clinically proven to quickly relieve and effectively prevent nausea and vomiting associated with motion sickness, anxiety, migraine, hangover, morning sickness, or even chemotherapy. The technology was originally developed over 20 years ago in hospitals, and it's now available to you. I've been using it, as I said, for 15 years, and I can tell you that it actually works. I can also tell you that if I forget my Relief Band, I regret it.
Hey, if you want the band that actually works at relieving your nausea, check out Relief Band. If you go to reliefband.com and use promo code Dinesh, you'll get 20% off plus free shipping and a no questions asked 30-day money-back guarantee. That's R-E-L-I-E-F-B-A-N-D, reliefband.com, promo code Dinesh. Debbie and I are talking about the border. The latest development with regard to Martha's Vineyard, let's remember that Martha's Vineyard was the venue to which Ron DeSantis sent illegal migrants to. It's like, hey, you want them. You're a sanctuary city. Here, you have them. And it was just a small number, I think 50 or so. Apparently, a bunch of those guys were from Venezuela, mostly Venezuelan, it says.
Wow.
And evidently, when I first read this, I sort of had to take a double take. It says that the Venezuelans who are undocumented immigrants in Martha's Vineyard are filing a lawsuit against Ron DeSantis. And I'm like, wait a minute. I thought these are guys who are destitute. They're trying to survive. Well, it turns out they are being manipulated or organized by a Boston-based group called the Lawyers for Civil Rights. So the Lawyers for Civil Rights get with these guys and say, hey, listen, we have a way to make some money for you. We'll pay all the costs. You don't have to pay anything. We're going to sue Ron DeSantis. They're asking for $75,000 for, quote, economic, emotional, and constitutional harms. Now, this is right out of the playbook of the left. It's kind of an operation. Can we find a sympathetic judge, sympathetic jury? Can we get a ruling in our favor? Can we politicize this in a way that's going to result in a win for us? But that's why they're doing it.
Look, I know these are my paisanos, okay? These are from my home country. But listen, they're being manipulated, and they don't actually understand the political parties in America. They actually think that the Republicans are like the Chavistas, and they think the Democrats are like the opposition in Venezuela. But in fact, it's the exact opposite. The Democrats are the socialists. They are the communists. They are the ones that will turn this country into Venezuela. They don't understand that because, again, they are being lied to. And, of course, they don't like being manipulated in that sort of fashion. And so they don't understand. Now, my cousin, who is Venezuelan, he has been wanting to come to America for a while. And every time he says, you know what, word on the street is that Biden says it's okay for us to go. You think it's okay for me to go? And I'm like, not illegally. Do not come through the border. Because not only that, but you will be kind of a pariah if you come. You know, people won't understand that you are fleeing Venezuela because of political persecution. They won't understand any of that. And I don't know if he fits the description of a true asylum seeker. So,
well, the point you're making here is that the Venezuelans, when they're trying to get out of a socialist hellhole, and we can hardly blame them for that. We would do the same if we were in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that they aren't legitimate applicants for asylum,
right.
But there is an asylum process.
There's a process.
And
yes,
what Biden is doing is he's circumventing the process, not because he cares about Venezuela. He hasn't lifted, the Biden administration hasn't lifted one finger to get the Venezuelans to change their policies, to respect human rights over there. None of that. They actually like the fact they've got a socialist regime in Venezuela. But at the same time, what they're trying to do is manipulate the Venezuelan migrants here into thinking that they are on their side and they're not.
Exactly, exactly. And that to me is the biggest takeaway from all this is that, gosh, these guys need to be educated. They left Venezuela because Venezuela was a socialist hellhole. And they are coming to America because the Democrats want it to be a socialist hellhole. I mean, they literally do, because that's the only way that people will be dependent on the government, just like they were in Venezuela. But these people, I don't know if they're just too ignorant or too dumb to see it. I don't understand.
I mean,
it.
In some ways, I understand it because it's difficult to take the long view. I mean, I think of myself. Let's say I arrive in the United States. I'm 17 years old. I know nothing about America. And even though my values are conservative, I'm coming to a country where all I want is opportunity. All I want is a place for my hard work and my talent to be able to kind of exhibit themselves. But the Democrats come to me and they say something like, you know, you're a victim of colonialism. You're a victim of you're coming from a country that's so poor. We're going to help you to circumvent the process. We have all these organizations that are going to file lawsuits on your behalf. We're going to make sure that you get everything you're entitled to, that your rights are respected. I would be like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Someone is on my side, not realizing that I myself have become now a pawn, an unwitting pawn, in which my ignorance is now being played on for somebody else's political benefit.
Exactly. And to be honest, we have a lot of poor people in this country. We have a lot of homeless people in this country. So if we are feeding and taking care of all of these illegals coming in, what are we doing about our own poverty, right? So this is just, if people cannot see it for what it is, then maybe people deserve this kind of government. I don't know.
Well, I think people are getting the message. And I mean, I think we'll have to wait and see what happens in November, because it seems to me that the country is in a very bad way. The signposts of it are right there in front of you. And as you say, if the American people are like, we like what's going on, we're actually kind of happy with the gas prices, we're fine with inflation, it goes up, comes down a little bit, goes up again, we like that kind of volatility, we like seeing our pension funds, you know, lose 15-20% of their value, we like seeing home prices soaring, interest rates going up. I'm speaking, of course, facetiously, but my point is if you like filth, if you like horrible crime rates, if you like homeless people coming up to you in a restaurant and grabbing food off your plate, and an open border, then you are, well, let's just say you might just be a Democrat. You've heard me say it before, I'm not a super fan of veggies generally, but I have to admit when I'm in the produce section, all those vibrant colors of fruits and veggies look so good. Well, Dr. Douglas Howard of Balance of Nature has told Debbie and me, he's like, hey, all the colors you see in the produce section equal nutritional variety. Different colors signify different key nutrients. So if you eat only your favorite one or two veggies, well, you're missing a whole world of vital nutrients. This is why Debbie and I take these 6 little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. Wow, 31. Variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. Debbie and I were talking about fantastic decision by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. I've been talking about it the last couple of days on the podcast. Basically, it says that in Texas, social media companies cannot censor people based on viewpoint discrimination. You can say anything you want that is legal. And if they do it, we can sue them. And we've talked about it. We will sue them. And we will not only be restored by force by the court, but we will also be entitled to attorney's fees. And I think that if this happens, it's going to set off a movement where lots of people are going to be doing the same thing. And the thing we were discussing is there is the only way that these social media platforms can overturn this Texas law is to now appeal it to the Supreme Court. There's only one more avenue to go to, but you were saying you don't think they might even do that.
Well, if they know what's good for them. I mean, you know.
Well, let's say why.
Well, because it would permanently, and across the nation, would make it illegal for them to censor opinion. Because that's actually what they are doing. They're censoring opinion. They're not censoring facts. They're censoring opinion. And as you said the other day, they can't even censor facts.
No.
Right?
Yeah, so, under the First Amendment, it is very clear that you are not only allowed to have errors of opinion, I have the wrong opinion, but you're allowed to make errors of fact. I can, if I were to go out and say something like,
the sky's green.
The sky is green.
Yep.
Or it's covered by the First Amendment. It doesn't mean because if I'm making a factual, I could be honestly mistaken. It doesn't really matter. But the point you're making, I think, is this, that if they go to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court goes, not only is the Texas law legal, but it is legal for states to pass laws declaring that these social media platforms are common carriers like the phone company. And just as the phone company can intrude on your phone calls, restrict your reach, ban you, deplatform you, you pay your bill, you get your service. They have to not only serve everybody, they have to serve everybody equally, which means that not just that they can't kick you off the platform, they can't even restrict you, because if they're restricting you and they're not restricting other people, they're treating you unequally.
Right.
So the point being that it will then send a message nationwide that any state, and certainly Republican states, can pass laws punishing these social media platforms for engaging in conduct that is, well, in this case, illegal.
Illegal. Yeah, I don't remember YouTube or Facebook ever banning anybody on the left for saying that Trump in 2016 was illegitimate. I don't remember that at all. Does anyone remember that?
They haven't done
that's
that.
That's because it didn't happen. So the problem with these companies is that they are an arm of the left. They tout everything the left tells them to do. they don't agree with climate change, we can't talk about climate change. You don't agree with the election, we can't talk about the election. So, and it's only conservatives.
And
so,
the trans issue and abortion, there's a wide, long list.
In fact, you know, when you go to upload a video or a podcast on YouTube, you have to go through AdSense and you have to go through community standards. And it is the community standards that they agree with, not normal community standards, right?
I talked about how, you know, Facebook's defense and YouTube's defense is we're private companies. We can do whatever we want. And what's great about the appellate court, the Fifth Circuit court, is they're like, that is flat out nonsense. Companies cannot do whatever they want. They are subject to all kinds of standards that they have to comply with. You might have private banks, but private banks can't do whatever they want. Private companies can't say just quite simply, you know, if you want to get a phone line, you've got to be at least 5 feet tall. AT&T is a private company. They can't say that. They can't decide that because you're black or because you're foreign-born or because, let's even say, you come from a very poor area of town and you may not be as reliable in paying your bills. They can't even do that. So the simple truth of the matter is that when they're common carriers, they have to offer their service on an equal basis to the general public. And I think what's remarkable is we've had laws against racial discrimination, gender discrimination. We have not had laws about viewpoint discrimination. Mm-hmm. That's
and
new.
That's exactly,
and that's the most sorely needed.
Yeah, because exactly. They don't like your viewpoint. They won't let you talk about your viewpoint. They won't even let you talk about your opinion about the viewpoint.
I mean, if you're a black or Hispanic or gay, are you likely to be treated badly, let's say, in a university today? On the contrary. Are your viewpoints likely to be suppressed? On the contrary. But on the other hand, if you're conservative, you're an evangelical Christian, you are a Trump supporter, that's where your rights come into play. That's where your rights are really jeopardized. Mm-hmm. And so viewpoint discrimination, it seems to me, is the one area now that is most seriously, this is where the discrimination is occurring, and this is where there needs to be some sort of legal and constitutional protection.
Yes.
Are you watching your retirement slip through your hands every day? Are you worried about a black swan market event that could be coming? This is an event that comes out of nowhere and basically decimates your accumulated savings. That's not all. Interest rates going up, inflation skyrocketing. How can we protect our money? How can you get ahead of what's happening with the economy? This is not a time to wing it or go with a hunch. You need a qualified expert on your side. Well, I'm not that expert, but my friend Rebecca Walzer is. She's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. Rebecca and her team will help to prepare you and your money for the turbulent times ahead. We all work hard for our money. We can use some really good guidance to help us build on what we have. Go to friendofdinesh.com and book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. That's friendofdinesh.com. Let Rebecca Walzer's team of experts protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. Odysseus doesn't know it, but he's in the land of the Cyclopes. And he realizes that things look a little strange around here. So he takes 12 of his men, kind of his favorites, he says. He takes some provisions from the ship. He takes a goatskin full of dark, sweet wine. And they go exploring in the caves in the island of the Cyclops. I said last time it's believed to be Sicily, but a rocky island with a lot of caves. And they're looking for the inhabitants of the island, but they don't see them. The Cyclopes are actually out in the fields pasturing their flocks. They're obviously agricultural people, or agricultural Cyclopes, I guess I should say. And inside the cave, Odysseus and his men see all these crates weighed down with cheese, and then there are also these pens where there are lambs divided up by age, the newborn, and so on. And then just as Odysseus and his friends are looking around, there's a thunderous noise. The Cyclops is back. This is the famous Cyclops named Polyphemus. And Odysseus tells us he lifted up the heavy stone and set it to block the entrance of the cave. It was a rock so huge and massive, 22 strong carts could not have dragged it from the threshold. So now we have a serious problem. Here's Odysseus and his men, and they are trapped inside the cave. The Cyclops is not presented as a giant. In fact, elsewhere, Odysseus will encounter a race of men or giants. But the Cyclops is obviously unnaturally strong. And he's able to, when he gets into the cave, roll a giant stone in front of it. And Odysseus is like, there's no way for us to get out. Then the Cyclops decides, let's light a fire so I can see better inside the darkness of the cave. He does this, and immediately, even though Odysseus and his men kind of move to the corner of the cave to try to hide, there's really no place to hide. And so when the light flashes up from the fire, the Cyclops sees them. And the Cyclops... Now, here we have a very interesting experience of, let's call it anti-Xenia. It's not Xenia, it's the opposite. The Cyclops goes, strangers, who are you? Where did you come from? Like, are you pirates? Cyclops wants to know, are you here to steal from me? The immediate approach of the Cyclops is hostile. Now, Odysseus and his men try to sort of appease the Cyclops and appeal to hospitality. Odysseus, we are Greeks, come here from Troy. The winds have swept us off in all directions across the vast expanse of sea, off course from our planned route home. And listen to the response of the Cyclops. Because Odysseus makes an appeal to Zeus. He makes an appeal to the gods. Let's remember the gods are kind of the enforcers of Xenia. The gods are the ones who sort of command that people treat strangers with friendliness. But the Cyclops is not impressed. Well, foreigner, you are a fool from some very distant country. You order me to fear the gods. My people think nothing of that Zeus with his big scepter. They know who Zeus is. But they're not intimidated by him. Cyclops goes on to say, I do the bidding of my own heart. Another way to put it, the Cyclops is a law unto himself. And then Odysseus says, Poseidon, the Earthshaker, shipwrecked me at the far end of your island. He pushed us in, wind dashed us on the rocks, we barely managed to survive. Now, this is actually very interesting because unknown to Odysseus, the Cyclops is actually a child, a son of Poseidon. So the Cyclops is partly, you may say, the son of at least a father who is immortal, a father who is a god. Odysseus, of course, doesn't know any of this. Homer writes, but he made no reply and showed no mercy, the Cyclops. Leaping up high, he reached his hands toward my men, seized two, and knocked them hard against the ground, and the floor was wet with brains. So he just dashes them to their death. He ripped them limb by limb to make his meal, then ate them like a lion on the mountains, devouring flesh, entrails, and marrow bones, and leaving nothing. The Cyclops basically eats these two men from head to toe. This must give you an idea of how the Cyclops is, to some degree, a kind of hybrid of man and beast, because this is cannibalism, obviously, pure and simple. Odysseus thinks he needs to strike back. He says that the kind of the military impulse enters him. He's a warrior, after all. And again, this is Odysseus now recounting this. Remember, he's talking to the Phaeacians. I thought I should get out my sword, go up to him, and thrust right through his torso. But then Odysseus realizes that would have doomed us all. On second thoughts, I realized we were too weak to move the mighty stone he set in the high doorway. So Odysseus can't get out that way. He needs to develop a crafty plan. And so his craftiness, a distinctive quality of Odysseus, comes into play here.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, Picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
Odysseus and his 12 men are now trapped in the cave of the Cyclops. This is the Cyclops named Polyphemus. And Odysseus, again, thinking a little bit about Kleos or glory, I was left scheming to take revenge on him and hurt him and gain the glory. But he then goes on to think, how am I going to do that? Well, he does need a weapon. So what he does is he takes a, he sees a big club, a kind of walking stick for the Cyclops that is there in the cave. And he orders his men to scrape it down, and make it smooth and sharpen the tip. So he creates, if you will, a spear. He says the cave was full of dung, so he was able to hide this spear now behind a pile of dung. But his idea is very simple, to blind the Cyclops, to essentially poke his eye out. Remember, the Cyclops has only one eye, and so in a sense, by poking the one eye, you've got him. The Cyclops is not going to be able to see. But of course, this doesn't solve the problem completely, because Odysseus still has to figure out, how do I get out of the cave if there is a giant stone blocking the exit? The next evening, the Cyclops comes back and grabs two men for dinner and eats them. So let's think of it. Odysseus started out with 12 men. Two of them were killed on the first day. Two more have been killed on the second day. Odysseus is now down to 8 men. And so Odysseus now begins to very cunningly unfurl his plan. He goes, hey, Cyclops, you have eaten some human meat. Now it's time to drink some wine. And Odysseus, let's remember, he had brought this kind of sweet wine from the ship in a wineskin. And so he gives the Cyclops the wine. The Cyclops starts gulping it down. Odysseus goes, yeah, have some more, have some more. The Cyclops has some more and is obviously feeling pretty good about himself. And the Cyclops says, what is your name? And this is a very interesting development here. The Cyclops is asking Odysseus to identify himself. And Odysseus, of course, is not going to give his name. Odysseus comes up with a really devious plan. He says, my name is No Man. No Man. Kind of weird, but N-O-M-A-N. No Man is my name. My family and my friends all call me No Man. And Odysseus then says, now that I've told you this, can you extend some hospitality to me? Can you be nice to me? Odysseus even implies, can you give me a gift? And the Cyclops says, yeah, I have a gift for you. He says, I will eat you last. I'm going to eat all your friends first, and after that I'll eat you, and that's my gift to you. You're going to be the last to be eaten by me. And Odysseus waits for the Cyclops, waits for the kind of alcohol in the Cyclops system to take a hold of him. The Cyclops kind of collapses back and falls asleep and basically begins to roll around and snore. And Odysseus then goes, grabs the spear, and drives the spear into the eye of the Cyclops. Homer describes this very vividly. Homer does not hesitate to give descriptions. He tugged the spear out of his eye, all soaked with gushing blood, and the Cyclops begins to shout out loud. And what the Cyclops does is he wants to get help because he can't see, and he knows that he's surrounded now by adversaries. And that he knows that Odysseus and his men have done this to him. And so what does he do? He goes to the entrance of the cave and he pushes the stone away and he begins to shout out to all the Cyclopes, his neighbors, to come and help him. So in this sense, the Cyclopes are a community in the sense that at least in moments of distress, they may each follow their own laws. But nevertheless, it's kind of like, you know, you help me when I'm in danger and I'll help you when you're in danger. So there is some sense of tribal solidarity among the Cyclopes. And apparently the Cyclopes all come out of their caves and they listen to see what this fellow, Polyphemus, has to say. They go, Polyphemus, what's the matter? Why are you screaming? Why are you waking us up in the middle of the evening, in the middle of the night? Is somebody trying to hurt you? And then, of course, in this very famous scene from Homer, Polyphemus replies, he goes, no man is hurting me. No man is killing me. No man is injuring me. And of course, the other Cyclopes are like, well, if no man is injuring you, what's your problem? One of the Cyclopes basically says, listen, if no man is hurting you, then your problems, such as they are, you obviously are in distress, must be caused by the gods. And we, the other Cyclopes, are not going to get involved in that. We don't want to make the gods angry at us. If they are causing you the problems, then it's your problem. Listen, go pray to your father, mighty Lord Poseidon. And all the Cyclopes basically go back to their own caves. They're not going to help Polyphemus. And then Odysseus says, I laugh to myself at how his trick has worked. And so Odysseus and his men are able to get out. They escape, they go to the ship, and they're about to sail off when Odysseus does something very interesting and a little out of character, and that is that he reveals to the Cyclops who he is. It turns out to be a terrible mistake that Odysseus, many of his subsequent problems are going to be due to what Odysseus does now. And when we pick this up on Monday, early next week, we'll see what Odysseus says to the Cyclops that ends up causing him a whole bunch of trouble.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.